Hello, and welcome to Prickly, a podcast from KJZZ's Politics Desk. Thanks for tuning in. I'm political editor Ben Giles.
I'm Wayne Shutsky. I cover politics.
And I'm Cameron Sanchez, and I cover politics too.
The 2025 Arizona legislative session kicks off today at the state capitol. We'll hear a lot of talk today from Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs and the Republican leaders in charge of the State House and Senate about what they want to get done before the session ends, sometime in the next several months, maybe April, maybe June or July. Those speeches aside, there are a couple of obvious and a few not so obvious topics that we here at the Politics Desk expect to dominate the conversation this year. Wayne and Cameron are going to catch us up to speed on those topics. Let's start with a not-so-obvious item. Cameron, can you tell us about the Maricopa County jail excise tax?
Yeah. So the county excise tax is a Maricopa County sales tax, which needs to be extended by the state legislature. And then it would go to the ballot if they pass it. And then voters can decide if they want to continue it, which brings in about $300 million a year. And it'll expire if there's no action taken. So this is sort of top of mind for the county and hopefully for lawmakers. It was extended for the last time in 2002. So it's been a long time coming. And it pays for a lot of the expenses we associate with detention centers, so jails.
Got it. So this sounds similar to the half-cent sales tax for transportation that Republican lawmakers and Democrats helped refer to the ballot last year for Maricopa County. Can you explain why the state legislature here has to get involved in these county-level issues?
So it's really Maricopa County, and I think it's because it's such a large county, they want to make sure that goes through that extra step of sort of having oversight. And if you recall from the last time they did this with what's known as Prop 400 or the transportation tax voters recently approved, it took a while to get a deal between Republicans and Democrats in the state legislature about how they wanted that tax to look before they would let it go to the ballot. So there could potentially be some pretty strong disagreements there, depending on how people think the money should be spent and what they want to, you know, write into the bill as it's moving through the process. Democrats versus Republicans. Republicans, I think, if you recall, with the transportation tax, were a little more resistant to letting it go through the way that the county had first suggested. So looking forward to seeing the arguments that happen.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, Republicans in particular took issue with how some of the transportation sales tax funding was going to be spent. They were resistant to having it be spent on things like light rail and other public transportation options. Is there any issue in particular related to these public safety, these detention expenses that could gum up the works?
What I've heard so far is some positive thinking from Democrats that they're in favor of just, you know, moving this along, getting it approved, making sure that the county has the funding it needs. I've heard pretty much silence from the Republicans so far, which is not to say that they won't support it, but makes me think that people are sort of mulling over their options. And it could be anything from one group wants to fund doorknobs and the other one wants to fund vegetarian meals. It could be anything under the sun, really, at this point.
All right. And moving right along to our next topic, Wayne, education is perpetually a important topic down at the state capitol. Are there any particular points of contention that will dominate the education conversation this year?
The first one that comes to mind is Proposition 123. That is a proposition that was originally narrowly passed by voters, I believe, in 2016. And basically what it does is it boosts the amount of money that K-12 public schools get from the Arizona Land Trust, which is just a big pot of money that is generated from state land that's sold, and then it goes into this investment account. And without getting into the specifics, it's a very large account, big pot of money, goes to several different uses. K-12 education is a big one. And so it basically just bumped the percentage. So it's a fairly significant source of education funding at this point, and it is set to expire coming up this summer.
Now, we heard a little bit of talk about this last year. It seemed like there were three competing ideas for whether or not to extend this this Prop 123 funding draw and how to extend it.
Yeah, 3, 4, 5, who's counting at this point? Some were like 1A and 1B, but essentially there seemed to be agreement that it should be extended, but the disagreement was between Democrats and Republicans, and then even between different camps of Republicans was what percentage of that money, of that should the draw from the trust fund be boosted to? It's at 6.9% now, I believe. Some Democrats would like to see it go higher. Some Republicans would like it to stay the same. And then someone like State Treasurer Kimberly Yee actually wanted to see it dropped a little bit because she thought it was at an unsustainable level. And then there was also disagreements over what should this pay for. A lot of Republicans wanted to see it just go towards teacher raises, whereas Democrats wanted to see it more broadly used for education purposes, including those teacher raises, but also other staff members and some other education-related expenses. So that's why we're looking at it as a point of contention, because it really they need to solve those differences, and they need to do it quick. As I said, it expires this summer, and in order to get it on the ballot in a special election by May, I believe there's a little bit of confusion over what the deadline is, but I believe they need to get it done within this first like month or so here of the session.
And what's at stake for schools if this does not happen quickly, if there isn't a statewide special election in time to renew this?
I don't have all the specifics on how quickly the funding runs out, but what I've heard is it's not necessarily a quote-unquote fiscal cliff. I believe Senator J.D. Mesnard told that to the Arizona Capitol Times, so it's not like the funding just is going to stop, but they do need to get it renewed. If it's not renewed at all, if it's not sent to the ballot or voters turn it down when it is, then it essentially amounts to a an education funding cut, because you've got these hundreds of millions of dollars in education funding that came from the source that will no longer be going there. So I imagine we see some sort of deal come through. It's as you mentioned earlier, it's just the specifics of that deal are not really clear at this moment.
Gotcha. Speaking of teacher pay, teacher retention has been a perpetual problem in Arizona. What do you expect will be proposed to help address that issue?
Well, I think Republicans are putting a lot of eggs in the Prop 123 basket, because then they can say, hey, here's some more teacher pay raises, which, pay is always the number one issue. We've had lots of study committees and these sorts of things, and everything boils down to pay. You want someone to do a job that's, sometimes thankless. You got to give them more money. But another idea that has been floated is adding teachers to the state health insurance plan, which is this big health insurance policy plan that most state agency employees and things like that are members of. Right now, school districts across the state kind of all have their own plans. A lot of them join together in these things called trusts. So they're their own little groupings where they're all they're pooling all their risk and they're lowering administrative costs. But the idea is that if we add them to this bigger plan, can we save them money? And we just saw a study come out from the Arizona Department of Administration that said, yes, we will save money for the educators. So this would be an incentive to get teachers in the classroom, because significantly would lower the premiums they're paying. However, a lot of those costs would just be shifted onto the school district. So it's not exactly a silver bullet here.
Gotcha. Sounds like a wash. Just depends on who's paying for what. So, and we'd be remiss if we ended our conversation about education without talking about the state's universal school voucher program. Wayne, Republicans retained control and actually picked up seats in both chambers at the Arizona legislature in the past election. So it's unlikely Democrats can fulfill a promise that they've made in recent years to try to roll back that program. But do you anticipate Republicans might agree to any changes at all to the voucher system?
I think the most likely change isn't necessarily a change to the system, but it's increased funding for the Arizona Department of Education to administer the system. What we've seen is we've had two high-profile cases of fraud in the program that are being investigated by the Attorney General's office and prosecuted by them. And essentially both relied on fraudsters using fake kids with fake birth certificates to be reimbursed by this program. So I actually spoke to the Attorney General recently, and what she said is that, if you're using a fake birth certificate, this should be caught on the front end. The fact that they're not says that, these employees who are charged with running this program are overworked or there's not enough of them to catch these problems. And when I spoke with Superintendent Tom Horn, he basically said the same thing, and he said he's working on a bill with lawmakers to boost that funding. So I imagine that would get support from Republicans, because it seemed kind of as supportive of the program. In terms of other bills that might try and attack this fraud, I don't know how much traction those will get, because basically anything that's seen as an attack on the program or limiting the program in any way is pretty quickly shot down by Republican lawmakers.
What about a recent maneuver by the Department of Education? They're now giving blanket preliminary approval to ESA voucher expenses up to a certain amount, and then going back to audit to double check those expenses after the fact.
As I understand it, this is directly related to what we just talked about, which is the lack of staffing and the need for more staff members to start looking at those things on the front end. What Superintendent Horn told me is basically that whole let's take these smaller expenses under $2,000 and just approve them right away. That's to clear a months-long backlog that has been just jamming up the works there that they haven't been able to catch up with. And once he clears that backlog, they'll start processing approvals more rapidly, and then they can go back and look at those at a later date. However, if they get this funding, that would give them the opportunity to hire more staff members, and I imagine that he would that he'd go back on that policy of just approving everything under $2,000 once they're staffed up to a level where they can look at those right away.
Perhaps an incentive to get Democrats to support more funding for the voucher program's administration, at least. Cameron, water is, dare I use our namesake, a prickly topic in Arizona. You have been following this closely for the last couple of years. What do you expect lawmakers to do to try to address the state's water security this year?
I do think the atmosphere around water is more tense than I've seen it in my time covering water in Arizona. There's a few things to keep an eye out for. I think one of the main ones is the Colorado River negotiations, which are going on right now. Now, a lot of that is happening at the federal level, but it's definitely something for us to watch still at the state level, because lawmakers have their own input and, of course, are representative of the interests of a lot of different groups, like agriculture, for instance. Basically, they're trying to make sure that Arizona doesn't get shafted with these negotiations in terms of who is forced to take cuts in terms of all the states that use water from the Colorado River. Something else to keep an eye out for, which we've been covering pretty closely, is this rural conservation idea. So the governor has been taking some steps on her own through her state agency to protect Arizona's groundwater, especially in rural areas. Now, everyone, of course, is in favor of having water conservation and making sure that groundwater is protected, but there's a lot of debate as to the best way to do that, and there's definitely frustration from Republicans that she's not going through the legislature, but she's sort of acting on her own, using her own tools without their input and approval. So that's going to continue to play out at the state level.
Those rural water management areas that the state's water agency have been pushing for the approval of, is there anything that Republicans have suggested as an alternative legislatively?
They have. And actually, the governor and Republicans last session had tried to come to a deal on an alternative to what are called AMAs, which are active management areas in which groundwater is protected and restricted. And they wanted to have something that is specifically designed for rural communities. But as with all water issues, the devil's in the details. They couldn't come to something that they all agreed on. And a lot of it was to do with representation. For example, how many steps does it take to get to the community agreeing to have one of these rural AMAs? And who's on the board managing it? And where do those people live? And who do they answer to? Stuff like that. And Hobbs kind of threw up her hands and said, you know what? We didn't agree on this, so I'm just doing my own thing anyway.
Okay. Also, looking back, we've obviously been following water closely. We spent much of the last year following the 2024 campaign, and conversations are still ongoing about that election, particularly among Republicans who say that they want to get election results faster, that they want races determined sooner. Wayne, just to kind of level set for everyone here, can you explain what is the difference between counting votes and race calls?
So race calls are done by media organizations, most famously by the Associated Press, and they basically are projecting who they believe is going to win a race once they believe they have seen enough votes going in a certain direction. So if you're in a very red or very blue state where, you know, one party dominates, then usually those calls come pretty early because you can make them with 25%, 30% of the vote in sometimes because a single candidate is winning by so many. But that doesn't mean the race is actually over. The votes are all counted. That doesn't happen until weeks later when the votes are certified, canvassed, all these technical terms we like to use, and, you know, your elected officials sign off on them. So it's a little bit different. People don't quite sometimes get the two confused, but typically all the votes are not counted when a race is called.
So it sounds like to get the Associated Press to feel more comfortable to make a race call in a competitive state like Arizona with very competitive and often lately very close statewide elections, we need more votes counted more quickly. So how do Republicans plan to get votes counted faster and sooner? We hear a lot of chatter about, you know, we need all the ballots counted the day of the election.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily possible, but getting a lot more counted is possible with certain reforms, and that's what Republicans are looking at. Our dedicated listeners will recognize these plans from our last episode, but basically Republicans are running two very similar bills that would affect late earlies. That's the term we use for them. Those are those early ballots that get mailed out to voters that they do not mail back in and instead drop off on Election Day. So basically, what these Republicans are looking to do is limit when and how those folks can drop those off. So right now, they can drop them off up until polls closing, and they just walk up and they put them in a box. They don't have to wait in line. And those can take another several days, another week to process because they have to go through a lengthy signature verification and all these things to verify who the voter was. So what the Republicans are looking to do is saying basically you won't be able to do that on Election Day. If you do want to drop them off on Election Day, potentially you could still do that, but you'd have to use your ID to verify who you are, cutting out that lengthy signature verification process. But you'd also have to wait in line. So it's kind of a give or take situation. They'd also extend some emergency voting opportunities to everyone over the weekend before Election Day to try and give more opportunities in that way. So they're saying we're not disenfranchising people. Democrats disagree, including Governor Katie Hobbs, who has said that any limiting of the way people vote now could be disenfranchising and that she wouldn't support it. So that's kind of the tension we're seeing there. But Republicans view this as kind of common sense ways to deliver election calls on election night, as we say, because those results still won't be certified until weeks later when the counties all officially canvass their votes.
Right, right. And I wonder, Wayne, is this something that Republicans might try to refer to the ballot if there is this fundamental disagreement between GOP leaders and the Democratic governor who has veto power over these changes to the way votes are counted and the way votes are allowed to be cast? Is this something that might go to the ballot in 2026?
I fully expect that to happen if the governor vetoes this bill, which thus far she said she will. Now, there's always political horse trading. Maybe she agrees to it if there's other provisions thrown in that she supports, things like that. So I won't rule out that she won't sign some version of the bill that does some version of this proposal. But if she doesn't, I fully expect Republicans to send it to the ballot because much like the border bill they sent to the ballot that was approved by voters, it's dealing with a topic that is in the popular consciousness, has a lot of popular support because there's a lot of people, as you alluded to earlier, who don't really understand why we can't just have the election results on election night. They don't understand the minutia. So if you throw something like that on the ballot that basically says, you know, well, this is a change we're going to make and it's going to get you results quicker, then, you know, I could see a lot of people getting on board with that. It's important to point out that these changes are all just about getting those results those calls quicker. They're not addressing any legitimate allegations of fraud or anything like that. It's really just about trying to let people know as soon as feasible who's winning these races.
Gotcha, gotcha. Ballot referrals were a big tactic the last 2 years under Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs.
Yep. And it's worth noting that Democrats say that's one of the reasons it took so long to count the ballots because we had a two-page ballot in most counties because one of the reasons was there were so many referrals on there.
Lots to look forward to later in this legislative session, and we're already looking ahead to the 2026 campaign as well. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Prickly Podcast from KJZZ's Politics Desk. You can tune in to 91.5 each and every day to hear our coverage of the upcoming legislative session and more. You can also log online anytime to kjzz.org.
And please subscribe to the Prickly Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks.